What's up, friends? Welcome back to the Dark Waters. I'm your host, Josh. It's Tuesday. Just got done recording with Drew Gregory. Awesome episode. We both just recently did the Hobie event up at the Susquehanna River, the Susky, whatever you want to call it. Don't judge me. But man, what an amazing event. Like, I'm not gonna lie, that place changed my life. It's my favorite place to fish now. It was just fucking awesome. If you haven't been there, you gotta go. I mean, the smallmouth there, dude, they're life changing. I mean, it was awesome, dude. Like, I caught so many fish. I think I caught over 200 fish in the 4 days I was fishing there. Never had a bad moment. Just was having fun the whole time. I think I came in 41st place, which, you know, that doesn't tell you anything. Like, I had a great time. I am not upset at all. I was driving back home Sunday after the tournament with a big smile on my face. Man, that place is just incredible. It's an amazing fishery. Tons of big fish, but just tons of fish, man. You got to go there. You got to try it out. Hopefully next year they got a tournament there. And I'm going to be there. Whenever the tournament there, I'm going to be there. So, but yeah, man, Drew, I think he got third place. Another awesome finish for Drew Gregory. But, man, I was supposed to have someone else come on the show last night, but they had to cancel due to some traffic getting home from the Susky. And I put that message out. Drew reached out to me. And, you know, Drew's an awesome guy, man. Not only is he a great angler, great ambassador for the sport, but just a really cool human being. And I love having him on the show. I mean, I'm lucky to be able to get someone like that on the show. He's just so knowledgeable. He's so sharing with the things that he knows. And I'm going to have him on a lot more. I know. Yeah, man, great conversation. We talked a lot about the Susky. We shared experiences, and it was one of my favorite conversations about one of my favorite places now. But anyways, guys, we'll jump into this thing. But first, I got to thank my sponsors, Six Fishing. I'll tell you right now, there are two spinning rods, the finesse rod, number one, and the number two hybrid spinning rod. Those were my key rods that I used for the tournament. Threw a lot of Ned rigs. I mean, they were just awesome. They performed well. They handled the pressure. But man, they just make great rods, man. Six Fishing, six rods to cover all your needs, all your lures, all your techniques. They got a 90-day buy them, try them, where if you don't like them, you can send them back, but you're gonna love them. These are great, high quality rods. They're about $100 a piece. The reason why they're so cheap is because they cut out the middleman. You know, not only are they great rods, but Travis Marin and Nick, the Informant Fisherman, they love teaching people how to fish. They love helping people catch bigger fish. So make sure you check them out. Go to sixfishing.com. They got a library full of videos of just good knowledge, man. Good tutorials, anywhere from finesse to frog fishing, whatever. But these rods will get the job done. Get all six of them. And use discount code DARKWATERS. Sorry, guys. I'm kind of sick. I don't think it's COVID. X-Zone Lures, the Ned Zone, that was key this weekend for me. Make sure you check them out. They got so many badass products, awesome colors. Use discount code capital D, capital W, 15. And Rogue Fishing Company, funny story. I dropped my phone in the water. I did not use my phone tether the way I was supposed to. Just like that, my phone fell in. I jumped in right after it. Lucky the Susky's not deep and it's pretty clear where I was at, so I was able to get it, no problem. But still, there's a lesson there, guys. Do like I said, not as I do, all right? Go to Rogue Fishing Company, buy you some gear that's going to save your gear, all right? Quit fucking around. You will lose your shit one day. But use discount code DARKWATERS and get some gear-saving shit. And last but not least, a big shout-out to Cody Lithium. This podcast, we are powered by Dakota Lithium, but, man, this is an awesome group. They put us up on a campsite. They bought us dinner, absolutely took care of us, man. Power your passion with, Dakota Lithium. I can't say enough about this company, man. They're good people. Awesome batteries. They are the most premier battery in kayak fishing, probably in fishing in general, but, check them out. You gotta get yourself one of those power boxes, man. It's an amazing product. But yeah, Dakota Lithium. I can't say enough about that company. I'm lucky to be on the team. I'm proud to be on the team, and it was awesome being with the Dakota Lithium team this past weekend. Cody Milton, Matthew Scott, just a whole bunch of cool anglers. Russ Snyder. But yeah, man. Great weekend, guys. I can't. This is one of my favorite weekends ever. I'll be thinking about this for the rest of my life. The Susquehanna is an amazing place. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Drew. I got another episode with Casey Reed tonight, and I think we're gonna do another one this week. But I'm gonna try to pump out some more episodes. I feel like I've been kind of not slacking, but just been really busy with some other stuff. So, but yeah, we'll get these things out. But enjoy the episode. We'll talk again soon. Ciao. Drew, welcome back to the Dark Water Podcast. It's like three times in like 2 months, I feel like.
Yeah, man, it's awesome, dude. I love this podcast. So
do you want to join my podcast too?
Yeah, why not? Let's just co-host them all.
Well, it's not just mine. Like, obviously, you're now part of Paddle and Finn. You got your own. You're always on Serious Angler. Our mutual friend Bailey. You love this podcast and stuff, man.
I mean, to me, it's just, I don't know. It's easy because I just love talking about fishing anyway. You know what I mean? So I'll be right on the phone back home from the Susquehanna. I called, my buddy Ken Morris. Obviously, we do the podcast together, and we're just chatting for like 30 minutes about all the same stuff. We could have just hit record. You know what I mean? So right. I like doing this anyway. So it works out good because we just hit record, and it's good content for all the fans out there that follow along with this really awesome sport we're blessed with.
Absolutely. Well, first off, congrats on a strong finish at the Susquehanna. And I'm gonna try to say the Susquehanna. If I butcher too much, Jake Harshman will get on my ass. But congrats, man. I gotta be honest with you. I'm gonna start off. I absolutely love that place. It was my first time going there. I had these weird expectations. I was anxious. I was nervous. Everything I looked at it, I'm like, this is gonna be horrible for me. And I get down there and I have a blast. Like, within the first 5 minutes of my first cast, I fell in love. I'm like, this is going to be an epic weekend. And it was. You can't look at where I placed and what my finish was. It doesn't tell you at all how much fun I had. It doesn't tell you all like what that experience meant to me and how much I want to get back to. I could have came in dead last, but if I would have had that same experience, it still would have felt the same way. It was that, like, where, right? We use words like this, but yeah, Freaking magical. You know what I mean? I was just something, man.
Dude, that place is magical. And you still had a good finish. I mean, I know it wasn't what you were expecting, maybe based on your pre-fishing and whatnot, but it was still a solid finish. And I'm sure you lost a fish here or there that would have, I mean, it was so tight that inches could have just, you could have been up in the, 20s or something with just one fish that you lost. Just one, yeah. Imagine if you caught two of the ones you lost. And I lost a couple. I'll show off the, let's see, Hobie does a good job. So I want to show this off. Their trophies are awesome, man.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Like, they're
dude,
so cool. And I was so lucky to get third because that's the first place, that gets a trophy. Everybody else that gets in the money, they get the check, obviously, but which are really cool to have. And I'm starting to have a good problem where they're piling up here behind me. But man, Hobie does a good job. That river's amazing, like you said. It's a magical is the best word because, well, let me tell you a little story about the Susquehanna River. Okay, I haven't fished it a ton. All right, but let me tell you about the first time I ever fished it. This is a cool story, a little background. Because was this your first time?
This is my first time. I avoided it last year and everything just because of my fear and anxiety about fishing skinny water like that.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought it was your first time. So I've fished all my life, right? Like you're younger and you go in and out of like when you're really hardcore. Like my dad, taught me to fish and waded rivers and creeks. And we had a little John boat. In college, I got a little bass boat. But when I graduated, I think I may have sold it my junior year or something, but I still liked to fish, but it wasn't like hardcore. Never really did a ton of tournaments growing up at all. It just wasn't my thing. I was just fishing, right? And then I didn't get into kayak fishing until college. It was actually after college. And this is leading into why right here, this story. So I graduated college. I'm going to date myself here, undergrad in 2002. Okay. So that's a long time ago. Yeah. And my buddy goes, hey man, what are you doing after college, after you graduate? And he was graduating too, and said, man, I don't really have any plans. I guess I'm gonna move back in with my parents, look for a job. And he goes, why don't you come up to Pennsylvania? Up to Pennsylvania, my parents live up there near Hershey, and they have a room that needs remodeling, right? In addition to the house or whatever, and they need help with it, right? So they have a contractor, and they just need some guys that can help build. So I said, all right, I'll go. Why not? Let's hang out for another 3 months in the summer, just enjoy, just relax for the summer up north. It's gonna be cooler. Had nothing else going on, so I mean, I'm delaying moving back in with my parents as long as possible, right? Because as much as I love my parents, who wants to like move right back in with your parents after like being away for 4 or 5 years in college, right? The height of social life, and then you're back in with your parents. So it was a good excuse to get away. And I went up there, didn't know anything about this river at all. I mean, he lives right next to it. And one day we're just goofing off at his grandmother's farm, and there's a little small creek, and it's like as wide as a, or as long, let's say, as a my Toyota Tacoma, for example. It's about that wide. So it's not very big. And we're just goofing around. And all of a sudden, you look in the water, it's crystal clear, and there's crawfish just on the floor of the creek. It was just covered. Like you were just crunching them, just stepping on them. Like there wasn't a rock to be seen. It was just that many crawfish. Unbelievable amount of life. And it just triggered something in my head. And I said, where does this flow it into downstream? And he was like, well, it gets a little bit bigger. Another creek joins it, gets bigger. And I go, let's go there. And let's pick up some fishing rods from like Walmart, some cheap little ultralights. So we got some little cheap ones from Walmart. And this little teeny creek, man, we're throwing like rooster tails. We're catching like 12 to like 16 inch smallmouth. And they're just small creak. And I was like, then I said, where does this flow? And he was like, yeah, in the Susquehanna River. I said, what's that? He was like, dude, it's this huge river. It's amazing. 2002, if you go back and look at the records, was a drought year. It was lower than it was during last year's Hobie BOS. And I'm talking, you could just walk across the whole thing, no problem anywhere. And we upgraded. We went to a tackle store and got some real, 6.5 foot spinning rods, some nicer spinning reels, some tubes. And the guy just said, look, just go out there. You can put in right by the airport. There's a place you can walk in by the Harrisburg Airport. Just walk over there and just start drifting those tubes down. We had some buzz baits. Next thing I know, we're catching like 100 fish a day and just worn out. And buzz baiting some 20 inchers up, some nice four pounders. And we went up by that Dolphin area, the Dolphin Narrows, where the statue is, and caught some really good big ones there on a buzz bait, like huge ones. And I was like, this place is amazing. So the rest of the summer, guess how much work we did on the room we were supposed to remodel? Like nothing.
Right.
We just left that gig and we just hung out and fished and chilled, and his parents didn't really care. I mean, we did a little help. I won't say we completely bailed on the job, but we basically bailed on the job, and we just
Right.
fished and just took it easy. And it was awesome, man. There was a bar right across the street and a restaurant from his parents' house. So we'd sneak out to that every night when when they thought we were asleep. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. And it's just, that was my first experience with the Susquehanna, which kindled my, it really ignited the passion for fishing again. And when I got home with back to my parents in Georgia on the east side of Atlanta, I needed an outlet to get away. And so I started wading the rivers and creeks nearby that my dad and I used to wade fish, trying to, just, it wasn't quite like the Susquehanna, but that's what I did. And next thing you know, I'm like looking on Googling, like, about rivers in Georgia, and found a website called georgiariverfishing.com. And then guys on that website and those forums, again, this is before Facebook, right? So just, we had forums back then. They were starting to use kayaks to go explore these rivers. And fortunately for me, in college, my senior year, a buddy of mine taught me how to whitewater kayak on the Ocoee River in Tennessee, which is world-class whitewater kayaking. So it clicked in my brain. I said, oh my goodness, kayak, which I just learned to do. Rivers, I can, instead of wading, taking forever to wade and explore just a little section, I can like float. And I got one a few weeks later, got a second one for my dad. Next thing you know, it was on. So 2002 was when it really all started for me.
Nice. Let me ask you, what do you think makes this river like just so awesome? Like I was thinking about the whole time, because we fish these tournaments during the summer, and especially when you get into like around this time, the pressure, you start feeling the pressure on these bigger lakes that we have tournaments on.
Right.
Especially like Oneida. They just had a big event there this past weekend or 2 weeks, whatever. And they were, like, I was talking to Bailey, everyone struggled. And yeah, you see that a lot with like these bigger tournaments. just because of all the pressure and like the temperatures and things like that. But this didn't seem like it had that problem. Like, I'm not exaggerating. And, you know, I've heard people say stuff like this before. It never happened to me. But I was catching over like 100 fish a day. I mean, they weren't all huge, but we all know that it doesn't matter how big a smallmouth is coming out of that river. It's gonna be fun. But I mean, when you look at like the numbers that were put up on day one, I think only like 4 or 6 people didn't catch a fish. Everyone else was in some way on them. And then you had 10 people that were above 90 inches day one. Yeah, I mean, it was just a slugfest, and I feel like there wasn't. It was, and the people I heard complaining about, I'm like, be careful what you complain about, because I've done these tournaments and I've seen it where like half the more than half the people on the standings didn't even get a limit. You know, so I was just like, this is a pretty amazing place. And I was trying to understand why it was so productive and so just like great. Like, what do you think? You know, being familiar with like rivers and stuff.
Sure, man. That's a great question. I mean, really good question. So kudos on that. But I'm going to tell you right now, here's why. So what like ecosystem needs to be able to hold more fish is you need more surface area under the water. You need surface area that could be in the form of rocks. Like, obviously, if you've got a big boulder, now you've got all that new surface area. If the floor is flat, there is no surface area. So you need more surface area, and that basically grass is surface area. Consider if you got growing grass, hydrilla, the more that you have, the more places you have for bait fish to hide, the more places you have for crawfish to hide, the more, you know what I mean? Like, the more life you have in an ecosystem, when you have more surface area. And the Susquehanna River is also very clear, which is good for aquatic life, right? So the sun can get down and penetrate and create the photosynthesis, which the grass needs. So, it's got a little bit of everything. It's got the grass. It's got the surface area with all the rocks, which is, again, all just places to bait fish and crawfish and helgramites and things like that. Aquatic insects can live. So it's got a strong, healthy ecosystem in terms of the food, because your water can only, you know, basically sustain as many fish as is really the food source can produce, right? So this is an incredible food source. So you start with the food source. Now you have the food source to sustain that many numbers of smallmouth. But because it's so wide, right, and shallow, that's the key. Because in the lakes, you have a lot of dead water, right?
Right.
You got a lot of just dead water because they're open. And I don't know if Oneida is is that a man-made lake? I think it is. Isn't it? Is it natural?
Shit, now you got me confused. I think it's natural, but with a lot of things that were messed around with it, like it leads into like the river systems, and it's part of the whole canal system as well. So I'm not to be honest, I'm not 100% sure.
I can't remember if there's a dam on it or not. But
there's a dam. There's so as it goes into the rivers, then it starts to dam up. But the lake itself is not dammed.
Yeah, I just wonder. Either way, it doesn't really matter. But my point is about most lakes are man-made. And so you've got a lot of dead water. You no longer have, oxygen depletes at a certain level. So now, no matter what's down deep in the surface area, all the rocks, boulders, or trees, or whatever covered up, a lot of that's useless, right? So the Susquehanna, you don't have it because you have the grass. It's shallow. You've got plenty of oxygen because of the plant life that's getting the sunlight, creating oxygen, not to mention the rapids are creating natural oxygen. So you've got no wasted water, if that makes sense, for fish to live. There's zero. Oxygen is good all the way from top to the bottom. Zero. Lakes, you have a lot of wasted oxygen areas and a lot of open water that's wasted. Plus, man-made lakes, there's something, I won't get too into the weeds here, but there's something called the trophic upsurge. And that is when a lake is made by man, right? And let's say it was made in the 80s or 70s, whatever. There's about a 10 or 15 year period where it is like on fire because, like, you've seen it before. You go to a lake and you see a big, huge tree falls in, right? And that tree is like money for like, you know, five or 10 years. It's got leaves on it still. They decay, and then the small branches are still there, and then they decay. Eventually, you just have a log, a stump. That's it. I mean, just the log and the trunk. That's about it, right? Because it all decays away. Well, it's really good, and it still can be good even at that trunk, but it can hold more fish, right? And more bait can hide in there during those first like 10 years that tree falls in the water. That's why new when people put brush piles in lakes, they're doing it to recreate that trophic upsurge in a very small way. So
right.
when you flood a lake originally, you get this trophic upsurge of an incredible amount of life and food and just stuff like that. But then it all decays away. And then unfortunately, sand and silt, nature does what it's supposed to do with rivers. It starts to silt in the head of the lake. That's why you see a lot of sand and mud at the head of lakes where the rivers come in. And sometimes it's not that great because they buried right. all the vegetation. They covered up all the rocks. It's destroyed all that good stuff we just talked about on the Susquehanna. However, there's only the only thing that can help lakes. And that's why you see a lot of these fisheries that the Elite Series guys go to and MLF and all these organizations. That's what there are some ebbs and flows in them. And the reason why is only due to grass, basically, or another artificial food source like herring. Like, let's say a lake doesn't have herring. You put it in there. Now you've created a mini ocean, right? So now the bass start feeding more like schooling, like ocean fish, but those are just open water fish. So anyway, you get the point, man, that the trophic upsurge is gone in a lot of the lakes. And so they're not as productive as they once were. And until you, and then the problem is that a lot of lake owners, as you know, don't like the grass for recreational jet yeah. skis. And so when they spray the grass, that's the only thing that could bring more surface area, like I said, and life, right? Oxygen and places for the bait to hide and the bass to hide to feed on the bait. The only thing that can save lakes is grass and bringing yeah. them back, basically, unless, like I said, herring or some other species is put in there.
Right.
But that, you know, but whatever, that's the answer to the question, man, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree. Cause, like, I mean, it was just so, when you're talking about, like, when you and your buddies saw, or when you saw, like, the crawfish and things like that, dude, I was seeing, like, I could see exactly yeah. what the smallmouth were feeding on. I saw dead pieces of crawfish all over the place. I saw, just all kinds of different kind of bait fish in bunches, especially around that grass. And it's really weird to catch, you know, pull a smallmouth out of grass. I've never really done it. I've done it a few times.
Yeah.
But to do it here, like, I mean, like, you could target it. But you knew why. I saw what was swimming around in there and helped me, you know, kind of dictate what I was going to throw. But, I mean, it was just – the whole river was alive to me. Like, I mean, it made it really hard for me because, I'm still kind of new to this. And, you know, I'm starting to get better. I'm starting to, you know, break out of that middle pack. You know, I'm starting to, you know, see myself in better rankings than I have over the last few years. But, like, with this place, it was difficult to decide, like, where I wanted to fish because, mm-hmm. like, where wasn't a bat – you know what I mean? Like, it's like – like, that's why I stuck to the area I stuck with, because, like, dude, I'm catching big fish. I don't know what to do. Like, I can go somewhere else. Are they going to be more bigger? I don't know. It was so hard to kind of figure out, like, where to go at this point. You know what I mean? Because, like, everything was just so good. And all I could think about was, like, well, the best thing you can do right now is stay away from other people and be as safe as you can possibly be. Because I'm still a little nervous about that, some of those areas. But still, it's just, like, I just couldn't find a bad place anywhere, nowhere.
Dude, you're right. I mean, because here's the deal. In that river, you've got bass that are feeding out of grass because the water was up, so that flooded those grass islands. And the grass we're talking about is kind of like
it reminds me of eelweed a little bit, but
what's that?
Oh, what's it called? Eelgrass.
There's some eelgrass, right?
Yeah.
But the grass that there's definitely a good amount of eelgrass in there. You couldn't see it as much this time because the river was murky, unless you were on the west side, it was a little cleaner. So you probably could have seen some over there, but yeah, you got eelgrass and the other grass islands.
Yeah.
Willow, it's like willow grass basically is what it's called. I'm pretty sure that's what they call it. It's the same stuff that basically is on the, like on the Coosa River and stuff. But anyway, that grass where their water was up enough where they were tucked into that grass on the islands too. They were in there hiding. And so you had to choose, okay, are you going to fish kind of grass islands like that? Are you going to choose to fish the shoals, like the big boulders and the rapids and the shoals where you got the obvious plunge pools, right, that are calm when you have a boulder sticking out of the water that, you know, creates that calm spot? Are you going to fish the sort of rapids like that? Are you going to fish wood, like places on the bank with that hard wood? There's a lot of are you going to fish the subtle shoals in those kind of deeper sections that you could see where the shoal is, but it's covered up under the water. There was a lot of places to catch them. And, you know, there were fish in all of them. You just kind of had to figure out which pattern suited you and where, like you said, you could find yourself away from some other people. And I caught fish on, you know, all of it really. But my main spot was, and Jody Queen mentioned this in his recap, you know, as he was the winner. So I don't know if we've mentioned that yet, but Jody won again. He went back to back there.
Yep.
And last year I was fourth and this year I was third. I was you know, really thinking that second day I could have pulled it off because I was on some big fish. Because I actually didn't get a chance to pre-fish because I just wasn't feeling good. I was kind of sick. So I just fished from the bank a little bit, and people were saying they were catching fish. So I was like, hey, you know, it's a river. I'll just kind of fish the moment. But anyway, when I was fishing the moment, I did find on day one, it was a grind, dude. I hardly caught any fish. I mean, I landed like seven. I think I had like two or three more bites, missed them. I mean, it was like, not like you were saying, it was tough. And I think obviously because I didn't pre-fish, I didn't really know where exactly they were. I just couldn't figure it out very well,
right?
But I had the right bites, at least, you know what I mean? So the head of, I found out there was a pattern. They were on the head of, just like Jody said in his recap, they were on the head of the grass islands. Anytime a smallmouth is on the head of anything, the head of a big log that's in the water, on in front of a big boulder, the head of a grass island, those are like feeding fish, active fish, because there's not really typically current breaks there. They're like in current a little bit more there than they would be. So they're wasting energy, and you're not going to waste energy unless you're going to get it back, you know, so with some food. So food and the bait was at the head of the islands, and occasionally you could see fish busting the bait at the head of the islands. And so that clued me in once I caught them. And on that second day when I did really well, I think I had 92 and three quarters and 88 and a quarter on day one, but 92 and three quarters on day two. So I saw them busting, and I threw a spinnerbait at the head of the island where they were, because I just tucked my kayak into that grass right near the head of the island, and then where I could get a good long cast, because it's like makes like a little pebbly just flat right in front of the island, right? And I just launched out there and just burned the spinnerbait as fast as I could where it's spitting on the surface, and they would just hammer it. And then I'd measure my fish, and by the time I took a photo and measured it, I'd throw back in there again, and it would already reset, and other fish were, and they would even start busting again before I even got the fish off the board. And I'm like quickly throwing it back in. I'm like, oh my gosh, I throw out there, bring, you know? And so I had about a flurry of, you know, maybe seven fish that were over 17 or about 16 and a half to like 18 and three quarter inches right there on the head of a grass island that really kicked it off. But then, like you were saying, you didn't know where to like almost target, because they were, everything looks fishy. I could not duplicate that at many other grass islands. I couldn't. They just happened to be that one particular one they were really just schooled up on. So I eventually found them on some wood on the bank. And then I started, the wind picked up, it changed, it got cloudy, and it just felt weird. It felt different. And all of a sudden, it was like every cast on this bank where I found there were some nice laydowns, every cast, like almost, I mean, not, it was like, I looked back at my pictures, it was probably like every 2 to 5 minutes I was catching another fish that was over like 17 inches, and I probably caught five to seven of them right there that were that big. It was just nuts. It's like every big fish just all of a sudden showed up in this one little section for me. So I got blessed with two big flurries really on that day.
Well, you know, one of the things, maybe this is just where I was at, but like something that I felt like they were kind of relating to was the sun, especially like on day two. I felt like as soon as that, cause like you had like periods where it was overcast, periods where the sun was out. And it, you know, and I would as soon as the sun came out, I'd go fish closer to the grass. As soon as like it started getting darker again, I would find them out kind of roaming, and it would change. Like I guess what I'm getting at is like their pattern or behavior would change like really quick on me. But I could figure it out, you know, based off I guess kind of where like, they could find shade and things like that. At least that was kind of for me on day two. Day one was kind of like I was still just trying to figure out how to fish on the river. And it took me about 2-3 hours to figure it out. But once I figured it out, I'm like, I could not stop catching fish. It was ridiculous. I don't have too many days like that. But
dude, that's awesome.
But the patterns just kept changing. But it was weird how quick you could figure it out. Maybe it's because just how many fish that were in there and how many things were doing, how much different shit they were doing. But I don't know. It was awesome. I mean,
it did keep changing, right? Actually, because when I drifted back down later in the day, I threw the same island I'd caught a bunch of fish off, and you know, granted, it had been resting for 5 hours. So you would think if they're just constantly there, like a school of fish on a lake, kind of generally in the same area, dude, I didn't get a bite on the way back. They weren't there. And every once in a while, when the weather would change, you would just see the middle of the river. I would see it in my section. It's kind of glassy on the middle, not like big rapids there, but kind of like subtle shoals and stuff.
Right.
All of a sudden, like at the certain times of day, it would just like you see minnows just skipping out of the water and just smallmouth crushing them. And you're like, they're on, like they're turned on. Let's get over here now. They just would just, there's these feeding windows they have. It's really odd.
You would find them like different spots. I mean, it was kind of like what you said. I would just be out there. I'm like, haven't had a bite in like, you know, 30 minutes. And all of a sudden, something would change. And I would see like stuff spitting up. I'm like, oh, gotta throw. And I'd throw something there and wham. And, you know, and it was like that, like just periodically through the day. I don't know. I've never had that kind of experience. I don't know if that's just a river thing, but I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
These bites would just sneak up on you, like just randomly throughout the day.
Yeah, it's more of a Susquehanna River thing, I'll say that. Most rivers are pretty predictable. The fish, I don't think, are like migrating from. Sometimes they'll be more on wood, and then in the Susquehanna, and then sometimes they move out and they feed out in the shoals. Like mm-hmm. they'll come off that wood out to the shoals, and you can't catch them on the wood at all. And they'll be out in the shoals or the grass islands, more in the middle. And then the next thing you know, you can't catch them there, but they're like on the wood. On the bank, it's just weird how they definitely move, man. No doubt about it. Because the bank that I caught all my fish on, I'll be honest with you, I was this close to figuring out on day one. And, you know, had I had some pre-fishing, maybe I would have. But then again, maybe it wouldn't have led me to do exactly what I did on tournament days. And maybe I would have done worse. You know what I mean? So I can't really look at it that way and think about it negatively. Like, you know, I could have maybe won because it didn't really get any pre-fishing. But I did figure it out. And I was so close on day one to figuring out. But the reason I didn't fish this bank on day one, and I almost didn't go up on day two, is because of stupid history in your head. Last year when the water was low, I fished the same section, right? And the bank that I fished and just started wailing them on. And I lost two, by the way, that were big. Like I lost one that probably was pushing 20. Another one was definitely 19 to 20 inch class. So, you know, I had definitely had the bites to potentially win. But because that probably would have put me just around Jody's length and upgrades. But last year, dude, it was like no current flow. There was no fish were on that bank. I fished it a couple times. There was no current. It was so low. You know what I mean? It was just no flow. They want some flow. They want moderate flow to fast. They don't really want to be, you know, in completely calm water unless it's calm inside the shoals or calm in a little back cut.
Yeah.
Adjacent to current. They don't want to be like in a long section of like calm as much as a large.
Yeah, what I found was like calm that was close. It was either calm that was close to moving water or something that was close to deeper water or something like, there was something like, you know, whatever, or something like that. But that was kind of like what I found. Like they wanted to be close to it at least. At least, on my part of the river.
Yeah, exactly. And this section was just a big, kind of a slower, deep section. And last year just didn't have any current. But fortunately for me this year, I did my river fishing instincts did kick in. And I said to myself, you know what? There's good current on this wood this year. Last year there wasn't. So I should not fish it. You know, I need to go try it. Right. And I mean, right off the bat, I missed a good one. It was, you know, really just unprepared for it. It hit so close to the boat and I saw a big one. I said, okay, this is something. And then I just started going and just hammering them. So that's kind of how my tournament, you know, went. And, I just single access to put in and went upstream about 4 miles single accessing in that strong current. But, you know, my Crescent, I was in a CK1 venture. It handled it great. But I tell you what, that was not my plan. My plan, just from a strategy standpoint, anyone listening wants to learn, I had another spot. I singled access because I had another spot I wanted to go to. If it wasn't like happening there at this first spot, I was going to move and then just start to float down. And I had a buddy who we had a plan where he could pick me up or I could pick him up once we got out. So I was just going to go do that. And, you know, they started biting. I started catching them. So I ended up staying there. And that's why I ended up going upstream, you know, 4 miles. But always have a backup plan. It'll make you feel good just up here in your head mentally. Because if they weren't biting and it was like, you know, 9:30, if I still hadn't had, you know, if basically it was going like it did on day one for me, which is very tough, very, very tough. I mean, I finally got a limit and then culled one time. But man, if you know, it's unbelievable that you could be in the Susquehanna River. Like it was not like your day one, I'm telling you right now, but my area at least did have a lot of big fish. I knew that.
Yeah.
So when I got bit, it was good. But, if that was happening to me on day two, I had that plan. So, and even on day one, I had that plan, but I just was going to stick it out there. I decided to stick it out because I was too far upstream to float back down and get in my truck and move spots to only have a couple hours left at the other spot. So, but always have a backup plan because you'll fish better mentally knowing you could always move. And then once you get to the new spot, you have a new like confidence. It's kind of like waking up in the morning. It's like a new day. You're rejuvenated. You're confident again, no matter what happened the day before. So I actually smart to have, you know, in some tournaments I move, you know, up to, you know, 3, 4, 5 times. I moved 5 times before on Lake Dardanelle. And it's just every tournament's different, but
Right.
Yeah, that's a little tip there.
Well, one thing, like on the way back home, and try, dude, like when I was not upset with my performance at all. Like I mean, I just like it's like what could I have done? And those are some of the things I thought about. Because like I'll tell you, like, one thing I learned from this river, you got to have your shit together. Like these fish are different. Like I mean, I went there not cocky, but I have experience with a lot of smallmouth up here. And so that was what I was thinking. Like I got a big smallmouth too. And so I went out there with this idea that I thought. But these fish are different, and you can't get away with like bullshit like you can up here, or anywhere else that I fish. Especially when it comes to like tackle, like gear. Like one of the things I learned because I did lose, and it was funny on day one and two. I learned valuable lessons on both days within the first hour, that crucial point to get those big fish, with my gear. I lost two fish, and I was able to see them. I was like. Like I'm not a pro. I can't tell you what a 22 inch fish looks like compared to 18.
Right.
But I know what a goddamn big fish looks like.
Yeah.
And so like both these fish on both days, I'm like, oh, that's a good one. Fish that would have definitely increase my score. But day one was like I had too light a tackle. It was just too light. The drag wasn't set right. I hooked these things and I get them close enough where I could see them enough to know what it was and just to watch it just. Break and go away, which is very heartbreaking when you see that stuff happen. But it was like you got to know how to fish these kind of rivers or these systems, and that was something that I wasn't prepared for. I wasn't prepared for that initial strike and the fight. Like when you get that fish close up to your boat and it realizes that you almost have it, and it does that immediate 180 to get away from you. Like how hard that pull is, and how much your gear needs to be able to allow. To allow that whatever's happening right there, that violence mm-hmm. that's happening right there. And both days, like one day, I feel like I had too light of a tackle, and so I beefed it up, and that fixed it. And then day two, I didn't fix my drag appropriately, and I paid for that because I did a lot of finesse fishing, and which I don't usually do. So it makes sense mm-hmm. why it kind of bit me in the ass, but everything like you gotta have your shit together. You gotta have the right tackle. And then you got to have like your setup. Like there's some of the things that I, as far as like the way I was catching them, my net was too big. I think at some points I needed to have something that was quicker. It's all these different things that mm-hmm. I just wasn't really, prepared for, but I learned, I learned real quick and I adapted real quick. But what about you? What are some of the things that you think about?
Yeah, man.
Because literally last month we fished Champlain together. I never have issues losing fish in places like that, but here, goddamn, did I lose a lot of important fish. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The current is really a factor because they'll go. Obviously, they have that to fight against you as well, and they'll go under. It's hard to pull them back upstream. Once they get downstream on you, mm-hmm. it's very risky to kind of if you're anchored or something like that, for example, or you're stopped. You need to pull your anchor up and float down with them because it's just hard to get them back. So if you don't have heavy enough tackle, if you can get their head out of the water, then you can kind of like ski them. But once they get down, they really dig and dive
they
and then
dig.
They pull the current. And it's even hard when they go under your boat. If your boat is perpendicular with the river and they're on the upstream side and they go down under, it's hard. Now it's hard. Now you're pulling them, from underneath the boat, you're pulling them back under on that side to try to get them, and now they're using the current against you. It's the same thing. You're pulling them upstream. Very hard. You're better off going around the front of your kayak with your rod, getting on the other side and just drifting down with them. And just, even if you're off your spot, who cares? The important thing is get that fish in. You'll get back to your spot. If that's your little hole, you'll get back up there. You might drift 50 to 75 yards with the fish or 100, who knows how big it is. But that's one thing. Two, the equipment, huge, huge point you brought up because I actually had to make a change too. I was catching him. I caught him on a whopper plopper on day one, and that's heavy line. So that's pretty easy when you get a good hook in them and you see their hook well. You can kind of horse them in a little bit more with that. So that's nice because I'm throwing it with like 40 pound braid.
Yeah.
I could have really had 50 or 60. I know a lot of pros throw 50 or 60, but I wanted a little bit better casting distance. So I just chose 40. I feel like 30 or 20 is definitely way too light for a plopper. You want the fact that braid floats to help it float, and not. So anyway, but then the spinnerbait though, this is where my point was about what you're saying on equipment. I knew the water was stained and I knew I was going to power fish no matter what, because you can usually get away with it in that stained water. And if I can get away with using a bait caster, like I didn't even have a spinning reel on my boat. Champlain here, I don't even remember the last tournament I had a spinning rod on the boat. I'm going to always try to find fish I can, you know, bring in with the bait caster and horse them in. And it's just, you're more likely to land them, right?
Yeah,
especially
no,
when
absolutely.
You're going for smallmouth. Yeah. So it's kind of like what Jacob Wheeler did on the St. Lawrence River. He upped his line size when everybody else was using light line. He won the BPT, you know, tournament there by saving time using 12-pound tests instead of 8 and then using a bait caster or whatever he could to sight fish those smallmouth to horse them in quicker.
Yeah.
And over the course of a day when you're catching 50 and 60 fish, he gained like a half an hour of fishing on everyone else who's taken 5 minutes to land the smallmouth.
Yep.
So I was doing the same thing knowing, okay, I can power fish these fish because it's murky. Great. So now I'm going to use 30-pound braid on all my bait casters except for the whopper plopper, my spinner bait, my chatter bait. You know, it turned out to be a spinner bait that was the player for me. But here's where what you said comes into play. I was using a light wire spinner bait, which
yes.
is has smaller blades, and typically it's a killer on the Susquehanna because the size of those minnows that you see jumping out of the water are the exact size of the blade, right, of my willow leaf blade. So that's why I go to that on that river a lot of times. But I caught my fish on it, and I was very scared because it gets bent out a lot. When you're really trying to bring them in, it gets bent, and eventually that spinnerbait will just break. On a big fish, I've had it happen too many times. You catch a certain number of fish, eventually just the spinnerbait breaks. So I would put a new one on after I caught so many. But when I got to this one area, I especially fish in the wood where I lost the big fish, I should have switched to at that point, I should have known in my head I can switch to like a 3/4 ounce Sling Blades Z-Man, which has a heavier wire, heavier gauge, and you can just horse them in and boat flip them if you need to, which I don't even bring a net. That may be dumb, but I just feel like I lose more fish with a net trying to fumble. So I don't use a net. I'm just a guy that's just used to using my hand. So eventually I lost a fish on that light wire spinnerbait because I tossed that right in front of me because I saw a log under the water. It was not breaking the surface, so you couldn't see it until you had your polarized glasses on, you were pretty close. I just did a short little pitch in front of me, like, you know, whatever, like 15 yards in front of me, just real quick. And then I like was cranking it in right when it got above that log, this giant, like almost like around 20 inches, I would say, just smashed it. Now I've got this a light wire hook and this fish is at like maybe 15 feet of line out and it's just going nuts, you know? And it was too quick of a moment. I couldn't decide, do I want to risk just horsing it in? It's so close and bringing it in, which the spinnerbait blade could have broken. Then I'd be kicking myself or bent straight or it just comes off. Or did I want to just hit the release on my bait caster, drift downstream with this fish and risk a very long, intense fight? And I just instead kind of held it there. Didn't really give it any line. I didn't really horse it in. I just kind of was letting it wear itself out close by. And she just eventually just pulled. I should have just gone for it, one or the other, you know, like release the bail and drifted, or just tried to boat flip her in real fast, horse her in, and just prayed that it stayed together. But after that fish loss, I made the adjustment immediately. I was like, I'm tying on a Sling Blade spinnerbait. I put an extra skirt on it, so I have two skirts on my spinnerbait because the skirts that come with it sometimes are kind of like iridescent, like, you know what I mean, or translucent, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Not iridescent, translucent, sort of opaque or whatever. And they don't have the same like bulkiness I wanted. So I put a solid like chartreuse skirt on it. So now it's this bright, solid, matte, like chartreuse, gaudy looking thing, right? Now, and I bend my spinnerbait blades down. I should grab one and I should, if I have one around here, I'll have to do it. But I bend my spinnerbait blades down tight where they're much tighter together. That way I can burn it. And if they're wide, if you have a real wide spinnerbait blade, I don't know if I can do this, you know, if it's real wide, then you're going to like have to go slower with it. But if you pinch it down real tight with the blades real close to the hook, you can burn it, right?
Right.
In the river, it's a much better streamlined profile for the river. It almost turns it into like an inline spinnerbait and actually make another bend on the wire, like an actual bend that brings those blades closer. So I burned that thing and I've got the 3/4 ounce weight so I can make long casts, and there was some current moving. So that's why I went with the 3/4 and it afforded me I think burning it's the key to entice them too. Long story short, bro, just like you made the adjustment, that was the key for me because I put a 3.75 streaks from Z-band on the back too. So I have a little soft, little teeny soft plastic on the back with a little tail that's just kicking. So I'm burning that thing, and I was just – it didn't make a difference in the bite. They were just crushing it the same way they were hitting the light wire, just destroying it. But every time I hooked one with that one, I was so much more confident.
Yeah.
I just brought them in quick, boat flipped them most of the time, just got them in. And had I had that spinnerbait on that big one, I probably would have, you know, probably would have caught it. So you got to make adjustments like that for sure, man.
We definitely, I think, like especially that river experience. Like, when I think about the guys who do really good on that river now, and I think about, you know, like Russell Johnson, Jake Harshman, obviously Jody Queen.
Yeah.
Those guys fish that river a lot, and they know. Like one of the things I didn't know. Like I was looking at, like I was having issues landing fish with my whopper plopper, and then you know Jake looked at it, he's like, yeah,
Yeah.
your hooks are all jacked up. You need different treble hooks
Yeah.
or whatever. I'm like, what do you mean? Like I've been catching fish with these. You know, whatever, but he's like, that's not gonna work here. You know, things like that. That I think
Yeah.
that, like, I feel like the more you fish this, like I'm excited about going there, like next year or hell, next month. I don't know yet. I'm gonna try to get back there as soon as I can. But like, I just feel like it's a special place. It's a unique place, but you need to know how to fish it. Or I mean, especially if you're doing tournaments, like there's just no room for error. Like your gear's got to
Yeah.
be tight. Your boat's got to be set up the right way. You got to understand how to fish the current. You got to have a really good system for measuring fish. You know, whatever that's going to be, it needs to be consistent, and it needs to be precise. Because that river, it's fun, it's great, but it's not easy. Like, and
No.
like you'll leave, like every day, it's like, man, I missed a good one. I missed a good one. I missed a good one.
Yep.
Or I almost flipped my kayak, or I almost, you know, like there's all kinds of things that can happen in that place, and
Yeah.
you just have to be ready for that place.
No doubt, man. And I'll break it down to statistically, the guys who win the tournaments obviously have fewer lost fish. They fish a lot cleaner, but there's probably about 20 people in a tournament that size. I would say 15 to 20 people that find the size fish and have enough bites with the size fish to win. And out of those 15 or 20 people, it's always the one who executes the best out of those 15 to 20. So first of all, if you're going into a tournament, 140 people, like we had 140, you A, got to find the fish. B, have all the right equipment and everything, like you said, get it all dialed in. And then C, because you know you don't want to lose, that can obviously cause you to lose some of your fish. So now, even though you got your equipment dialed in, you found the big fish, there's still times fish just get off, right? So now you just got to do whatever you can to execute, and it's always who executes the best out of those probably 15 to 20 people that get the bites. And that's the hardest thing, is to find the big fish and then to get the bites. That's the hardest thing in a tournament. So the other stuff, I feel like sharpening hooks. I have a hook sharpener I put on my kayak at all times. I'm constantly like resharpening constantly, but especially, and I do replace either resharpen the factory hooks on a whopper plopper, or I put replacement hooks on it. And then of course I continue to resharpen those as needed. After you get hooked on logs and things like that, you just catch, you know, you hit enough hard stuff with them that you need to. But if you do, I just rake my hands over them. And if I'm barely like raking my hands over them and they prick into my skin, then I know they're good, right? If they don't do that, then I'm like, okay, you're not penetrating, you know, a
Right.
smallmouth skin. But the key to a whopper plopper for sure is if they're hard to land. And it really comes down to, for me at least, you know, I think you're probably the same way. Our personalities are kind of similar. We have a lot of energy. We get hyped up. It's easy to pull it away from a fish, just like a buzz bait. But the key is almost close your eyes and not be looking at the whopper plopper when they strike, man. And wait till you feel them. When you feel them, then you lay into them. And then the goal is to continue to move that fish hard as you can, left and right. So, and it sounds bad, but in a tournament, it's just what has to be done. You really kind of hope that the fish gets hooked in the skin somewhere in the body with the other hook. Now, you know, you pray to God it doesn't get hooked in the eye. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, you just at least want them to get as many hooks in them as possible with treble hooks. And then once you see that they're hooked in the side like that, and they got like both sets of trebles in, honestly, I don't mess around anymore. Once I actually see that, I kind of bring them in and boat flip them. If not, if they only got that one treble, then you're like, okay, it's like a game of like float down the river, just always hitting the release on your bail. Just like, oh, it can't put too much pressure on this fish, or it's gonna get away, and it just really tire them out then. But all good points, man. It all, dude. Like, look at Olympic swimmers. We're in the middle of Olympic season, and I've used this analogy before, but at some point, somebody, you know, said, figured out if I shave all the hair on my body, I gain like a half a second in this race, right? And that's what the little stuff that you and I are talking about now with equipment and all the tools with your kayak and everything dialed in just right. If it gets you one extra bite or helps you land one more
One
fish,
fish.
it could make all the difference. Then you combine that with a few other things you can do that can also help you land more fish, whether you save time with something or whatever, then it equates to a win or cashing a check, you know, for some people, the difference in a check or not.
Right.
You were right there. You probably catch land those two fish and you're probably, you know, in the money.
Or so, if not, but still just have better points. And that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what I was aiming for, you know, just some really good points. And, you know, it is what it is, but like, I think so much learning came from this tournament that,
yeah,
what I got out of this tournament was it's been very, very, like, I've been smiling for days, even though my body's wrecked.
That's
I'm
cool.
Tired, I'm exhausted, but it's just like, you know, I'm starting to get things, and I'm just like, it's almost to the point, like, I can't wait till next season, just because how much I've learned.
Man.
But especially, like, I mean, like, I've learned a lot this season, but especially, like, this event, it showed me, like, how good I've gotten. But there's, like, these few things, and if I can just tweak it, you know, if I think about, you know, what you're saying, like, the sharpening the hooks, you know, the gear and things like that, like, how much better next season or the rest of the season's really going to be for me. I mean, it's only a matter of time before I'm creeping, I'm getting closer and closer, and it's just, I feel there's just these few things, if I tweak, I'm up there competing with you guys. You know what I mean?
Are you going to fish three, or have you fished three to get your
this is my second one. Okay. The wife has let me do lacrosse.
Heck yeah, man.
And then whatever happens to lacrosse is going to dictate if I'm going to Pickwick or the TOC. So
right. Dude, I'm excited. Hey, I still have never ran into you at one of these tournaments. I was at Ferryboat Campgrounds with Cody and Matt Scotch when he got the hook in his thumb. I didn't, you know, Jody was there. I saw Green, Guillermo. We all hung out for a little bit, and I just missed you. But, man, one of these days, maybe at lacrosse, we got to make it happen. We'll go grab a drink or something and
definitely and
chill. But yeah, so how'd you do again at Champlain? I can't remember where you finished.
I didn't do horrible. I think I finished 30, which is kind of where I was. You know, so, like, you know, both of my first Hobie events, you know, I got a 41st and a 30. You can't get mad at stuff like that, because when you look at everyone that was behind you, mm-hmm. everybody wants to be where you're at, you know what I mean? And like, I'm only 10 places away from where I really want to be at right now, you know, a top 20 finish or a top 10 finish. So it's like, it's just figuring out, there's certain things I gotta figure out why you guys are getting the bigger fish, because I'm getting fish. Mm-hmm. I'm getting limits every day. I gotta figure out why you guys are getting the bigger fish and I'm not. What are you guys doing? And it can't be that much different, you know what I mean? There's just like these little things I gotta figure out, but it's just like, I'm getting close, Drew. I'm getting close.
You are, man. Dude, you're getting close.
I'm getting so motivated. I get so pumped. Yeah. I'm just like, you know,
I'm excited for you. Your floor is, that's the key, I think, the improvements you've made, they've increased your floor. You know what I mean? Like, there's a floor to, you know, you've probably seen how consistent, you know, Russ and Jody and even guys like myself, they're like on our worst days, right? Their worst days, we still have, we're doing something right that where our floor is still pretty high compared to like most of the field. And you can look at any professional bass fisherman, you know, like, or golfers or any other sport that's like this. The guys that are really, you know, winning a lot in the top 10, they're very rarely like at the, you know, in the, like the bottom, right? They have a floor that's like the top 30% or 25-30% at their worst. And all the stuff we're talking about now, and you're doing a really good job with it, because I feel like you didn't execute the way you wanted, but look how good you still finished. So there, that tells me you really are getting there, and your floor is kind of where you placed. And just think, if you land those fish, make a few adjustments, like your ceiling could definitely be, you know, a top five, top 10 finish, and even a win if you just stumble on the right, you know, like, you're right in it, man. So I look forward to seeing you at lacrosse, and I've never fished there, so I'm excited about that. I was supposed to go last year, just never worked out, and I'm pumped to get over there and see if we can find some more big smallmouth and even largemouth over there, because they're going to come into play big time.
Big time.
Yeah.
All right. So last thing, and then we'll wrap this thing up. But like, what did you? Like, you fished the Crescent. I'm sorry, I'm not too familiar with them yet. You know, I'm obviously an old town guy, and you know, like, we become gang members, you know, with our kayaks and stuff
that.
But I mean, you didn't have a paddle, or you didn't have a pedal drive. Is that correct?
No, I was just using a paddle.
Now, does that? Is it just something that you like to do, or is it something that you guys are working on in the future? Or like, how do you look at that? Because, like, to me, I would have had a hard time without my my pedal drive, but that might be a bad thing, because I've come so so accustomed to it that, you know, there are times where you can't really use your pedals, and you got to use your paddle. So is it something that you just, you know, like, are you just a minimalist type person, or what?
Yeah, I mean, there's a style. There's different styles, obviously, in a river. So if you look at any whitewater kayakers or, you know, creekers, creek running whitewater kayaks and river running whitewater kayaks. Obviously, no, none of those have pedals. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, right? Paddle right. is the better tool for river. Now, you know, obviously we're not in extreme whitewater rivers, but to me, being able to maneuver a river downstream, you're still always better off with a paddle because you just have this to the water and this to the water on that side. And it just to do a little backstroke or control, it's just easier to me. It's better to me. For drifting downstream, I use a drag chain and just make these little micro movements with the paddle if I need to. Going upstream to me, it was nice because I could tuck into the side of the river or to the side sometimes. And it really, the current wasn't really bad when you're right against the bank or you're right behind grass islands, kind of faring your way up. And I could beach my kayak really easy. And I know you can beach those kayaks and just to stop on rocks and stuff. I just kind of picked my way up and it was just kind of what I'm, I guess, comfortable with. And then if I ever need to go downstream and, you know, hit some rapids, then, you know, I was able to. Now, certainly there's an advantage to the pedals if you were going to make a long run somewhere, like, you know, go, you needed speed. I didn't really need that in this event. And, you know, like I wasn't racing out of my, I was the only person at my landing. That I'm the only person that launched there, which is pretty amazing in a field. You know, we only had so much river and a field that was 140 anglers. And that's just kind of, that's sort of my MO. People know that. I try to find places that are far away from, you know, others where I don't think anybody else is going to be, even if maybe the most of the winning fish aren't really in that area. I feel like it could be winning fish once the other spots are split up between all the people that are there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it just suits my style. You know what I mean? With the paddle and being able to maneuver a little bit better in rapids. Now, Susquehanna is a different animal. There's a lot of sections that there was a dam downstream. There's a lot of, we had, the river was up. So the, you know, the pedal drives work great, especially last year when the river was low. I know a lot of people did a lot of wading with just tethered to their kayaks. Cause I mean, obviously it's somewhat problematic when you get in shallow water with fins that kick down. I was scooting in a lot of really shallow and skinny water where fins wouldn't have worked mm-hmm. anyway. So that's kind of just where my choice came in. I mean, you know, even though I designed I'm designing the fishing line for Crescent from here forward. I mean, I could still get in a pedal kayak if I needed to for, you know, to have, if I thought it was a big enough advantage in a tournament, but, and maybe I will one day, but so far I try to fish my style. You know what I mean? And
right.
go to places that fit my style that I enjoy, which is wild places and river bassin.
Gotcha.
People know I'm known for river bassin. So I actually prefer, if I can, to find fish in that little 10-foot ultralight that Crescent makes. It's like $7.99 retail. It's, I mean, anybody can get into the sport, you know, with a boat like that. And I prefer to try to find fish like that because I know if I do, if I'm in that kayak or this 11-foot CK1 Venture I was in, then I know for sure nobody else is going to be there because most people are in pedal drives and they can't either access where I'm accessing because it's just too hard and too taxing on your body to pull it off, or it's too skinny and they just can't get there. So, you know, there's some pros to the paddle side of things as well. And honestly, man, I just was looking the other day and it hasn't, I mean, obviously it hasn't seemed to hurt me. I was looking the other day and this is kind of a crazy stat that I'll throw out sort of, it kind of sounds like a humble brag, but I was more just blown away by it. So I want to kind of throw it out and it as an encouragement to anybody out there who doesn't have like $3,000, $4,000, and $5,000 to get into a pedal drive. That's what this is really more about. But, I fished in, I don't know how many Hobie Bass Opens now, probably like 8. I've never finished worse than 7th. Other than one time, every time I've been, you know, I was 4th, 1st, 4th, 7th at the TOC, then 4th at Seminole. And then I did have a bad 46th at Dardanelle, where I'd won the year before. So history kind of bit me. And then I was, what, 2nd in Champlain, 3rd here. And yeah, that's, so it's just insane that like, I'm doing this all of a paddle kayaks that are cheap, you know, this
yeah.
cheap compared to the, you know, the pedal ones,
right.
$7.99. So I didn't realize I'd had that sort of track record because I, in the meantime, I'm fishing bass and KBF and whatever. And then I looked back at the Hobies and I was like, oh my Lord, I've never finished worse than 7th other than one time. And so it's,
right.
I'm kind of fishing blacked out right now, to be honest with you. I'm just blacking out, catching them. I don't know what's going on, but I'll wake up one of these days. And, but in the meantime, I got to enjoy it while I can. So
no, yeah, hope. Absolutely.
Yeah,
all right. Man. Well, cool, Drew, man. I appreciate you coming on the show. Is there anything you want to talk about or anything you want to put out there for people to know? I mean, I feel like it's weird because like you were, I feel like you were just on here like a few weeks ago, but whatever. Anything new coming up?
Yeah, anything new? I mean, I really am just excited to see the latest update to the Hobie BOS, Angler of the Year. That'll be exciting to see that next couple of days and see where I am in that. But lacrosse, just you guys look forward to that. It's the next big tournament on our agenda. That one's gonna be crazy, insane, fun. And yeah, I mean, after that, it's not much left. Like you said, some people are gonna fish Pickwick. I might fish a KBF in Kentucky Lake to try to get my points up over there so I can get back in a little bit more in the hunt for AOI on that side. And then I'm done fishing bass for the year. I've already qualified for the 2022 championship. So until they have an AOI, I'm kind of, I'm like you. I got a kid and a wife, family, and it's like, I can't really go away for a one day tournament when there's really not, much more than just maybe a payout on the line. So yeah, so it's gonna be exciting. Hey, we got the championships coming up, the TOC, which hopefully with a good finish for you at lacrosse, you could probably get in on points.
Maybe.
I mean, I'm serious. I think you probably one good finish with two like 30, 30 place finishes, you have a good chance of getting in on points. So I mean, and then of course you have the chance to maybe do Pickwick to increase those odds even more. So I hope to see you there. And then I'm gonna be at the KBF National Championship on in Shreveport again. So the year's almost a wrap,
I
man.
know, dude. Like
It's
it's gone by so fast, man.
almost a wrap. We'll have to get back on and talk again about we'll go over like scheduling for next year as these trails start to get into that and what we want to see, changes we might want to see done to some of these trails, like some changes we want to see, some positive changes. And I know Bass is listening. They are listening. I know some people have had a little gripe with some of the way some things have been done, but they're just dipping their feet in the water here. You know what I mean? So they're learning as they go along a little bit. And it doesn't take them long to learn because they've got some good examples, set forth already in front of them with some other trails that are doing a really good job, Hobie, KBF. So I think you'll see some changes there. And I'm excited to get into those kind of conversations because once the schedules come out for next year, that's a whole podcast. We
Yeah,
just can
that's
it
like
gets pumped.
it gets you through the off season.
Yeah, diving into Google Maps and building, all the research gets you through the off season for sure. So, no, I mean that's cool. That's it for me, man. I'm just excited to see where the season ends up and where we all shake out and all this AOI stuff. It's gonna be a race to the finish, man. And the fantasy game, by the way, if you guys do listen to the Paddle and Fin, the Reel Down podcast, we are getting that back up to date. And next year, Paddle and Fin sort of taking over that fantasy game. So it's going to be they've already taken it over now, but it's gonna be updated like. Like every like Monday, there's gonna be updated like with the result with the money that the players earn, which equals fantasy points for everyone. And again, you pick six anglers. I know a lot of people did it this year and last year, but it doesn't do any good if we can't update it fast enough. A fantasy game has to be almost instant. So they'll be updated probably like Sunday night or Monday even, and we can start to maybe even talk about that. And the reason why, and I'm not talking about just talk about the game, but because the game is fantasy points equals cash made, money earned by the anglers and the three national trails, then it's just a cool conversation to have, like to be able to see, like, oh my goodness, look how much, look what Jody's at on the money list or Russ or Cody Milton or whoever. You kind of get to see like where everyone's stacked up and how much money's been, made in kayak fishing. It's pretty cool, man. Pretty impressive. So lots of fun conversations to have in the
Nice.
future, buddy.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. That's it, man. Unless you go, you want to thank anyone real quick? Because I know you got important people behind you, but you talk about them all the time as well. So,
I talk about yeah. Just follow me at Drew Gregory Fishing everywhere, guys, on social media. You guys hear me talk about my main three: Crescent, Z-Man, and Realtree Fishing. Those are the main three sort of headline sponsors. But everybody else, if you want to learn more about it, just follow me and I tag them and you'll see it. And like you said, it's equipment that gets the job done for me. It's not salesy, it's not gimmicky. I use it all and I only use it because it works. I wouldn't have never approached any of my sponsors if it wasn't something I already used that worked. So it's definitely a good testimonial. Just follow along. So keep up the great work, buddy. Really
all
love the
right.
podcast. So
I
keep it up,
appreciate
man.
it. All right, man. Well, I'll talk to you soon. Have a good
See
day.
ya. All right,
See ya.
see ya.